for one, welcome our new gentlemen, overlords.
Who? Now that's a team I can work with.
I love it. I love bringing people together.
How we doing?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gentlemen Overlords. I am Andrew.
I'm Max.
I'm Robert.
And guys, let's roll right into it. Let's talk about some of the movies we have seen, baby.
You forget about me. Look my way, girl. Something breakfast.
Movies we've seen.
Robert, hit us up, buddy. What movies have you seen?
Movies have I seen? I watched The NeverEnding Story again, which I didn't realize had an American versus European cut with like a slightly more footage. But I disliked it ultimately because it is, God, I'm going to fuck it up. I think Giorgio Moroder did the score, but it's missing some of like the synthy guitar parts of the score. So it does affect it for me, having watched the other version so many times. It was cool to see some like little moments that were kind of extended. It felt like one of those DVDs from the 2000s where it's like with extra footage and it's just like, mm-hmm. Stuff that they kind of trimmed, sort of. Nothing groundbreaking. It wasn't like a brand new fucking scene where Gamork fights Bastion with, you know, fisticuffs or anything. So it was cool to know of its existence, but it wasn't didn't really blow my mind, and I prefer the other version. I also watched Children of Men, which I think is a great movie. With some of those really great long shots, you know, single takes that do have some cuts in some of them. Mm-hmm. They're not true single takes, but the one towards the end where Clive Owen is going into the building, and it does a really great job. It's a movie I can't watch all the time because it's a huge downer, but it's great. I don't know how recently you guys have watched that.
I haven't seen it since it came out, but
yeah, the late 2000s would be me too.
Oh boy. I think you guys should check it out again. It's not it is kind of hopeful in a way by the end, but it's grim, but it's just like it's a really great universe. They show you so many things on the screen that kind of give you an idea of where society is. And it's crazy to get dropped into a world where the first thing that happens in the movie is the youngest person on Earth dies or is killed. And they're like 18. And it's just like wild to start that way and then be like, okay, a world where in 18 years, no one has had a baby, heard a baby, no one's been pushing a stroller, no one's been in a little sling, no one's toddling around on a playground. Schools are effectively pointless. It's just crazy, but it's a really awesome film. So I recommend folks check it out. I watched something it's a Cillian Murphy movie called Watching the Detectives. Jamie put it on. And it's so bad that I said that I think he should have his Oscar taken away.
Damn. Is he bad in it?
He's just like, I love Cillian Murphy. He's doing the best, but it is Lucy Liu is like a manic pixie dream girl that falls for him. And he works at like a VHS style sort of like, you know, indie sort of video store. And then that's, I dig that subject matter. I love physical media. That's, you've already hooked me with that. So I'm already in there, but
the poster for this movie is unbelievable. Look at this. Like, this is such a fucking like,
I mean, I don't even think that's like, that's probably like someone made that now. I'm sure that the original one is even worse. I found it frustrating as hell. And Lucy Liu's character is like, yeah, like I said, like a manic pixie dream girl sort of thing. It's not great. I didn't like it. If you're looking for that sort of aesthetic, I would go for Be Kind, Rewind, right? Is that what the name of it is?
Mm-hmm. The yes. Jack Black and...
Yes.
Yeah.
Not good.
I gotta say, her career is just so wild because, like, she had done...
Lou?
Yeah, like, she had done both Charlie's Angels movies, like, 7 years prior to that, and then she's doing this, like, very, like... Like, this looks like just the poster of it makes it look like this is something that was made on like a like $50,000 budget. Like, it's just like, it's so, you know,
it's one of those movies that looks like inexplicably like it was filmed earlier and it's just like, you know, ineptitude. Right. It's just like, you can't, there's movies that were made on like 28 Days Later is filmed on like the smallest, shittiest cameras you could find. There's no way to like HD that movie really. But it like works for the material, and this is not that. So,
you disagree with this IMDb user review, 8 out of 10 from Red Hiro, watching the detectives screwball comedy for the 21st century. You disagree with that?
No.
Okay.
I do. There was a couple movies that I saw at a bar and then finished. Spider-Man 2. John Wick. I want to see. Did I hear that they were like re-releasing the Raimi Spider-Mans this year? I think they're doing like them in theaters again.
I think you're right.
I might want to go see those. I think Jamie said she has seen them, but not since they came out. But for some reason, I thought she hadn't seen them at all. And I really love 2. I think the Doc Ock stuff is fun. I think there's almost no more. Spider-Man Peter Parker is so humiliated at the party where like J. Jonah Jameson hires him to like take pictures of his son, the astronaut. And it's like, Mary Jane rejects him. He can't get a drink. The guy was like, oh, he's like, actually, I asked her to marry me. And she said, yes. And then he's like, come on, Parker, take pictures. And it's like, it's just like a cascade of him just like at the lowest point. And then I think after he leaves is when he can't shoot his web and falls or whatever, but I just love it, and it just embraces the comic bookiness of it all, which is something I appreciate. Like, I love when a movie is like, maybe not Watchmen, but like, I like when a movie embraces like the panel sort of idea of a comic book and kind of flows that way. Like, Raimi, I think, nailed it. I love those movies, so if it is coming out, I will probably go and watch it again. I started it at one point. In fact, Max, I think I started this at one of your previous residences during a movie night, Night of the Comet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I left like 20 minutes in, or I think I'd watched a couple movies and I ended up having to leave. So I'd seen the starting, but I never watched the whole movie, Night of the Comet. And I really enjoyed it. They covered it on a podcast I work for, Action Boys. And I really liked it. And even just the simple filter after the inciting event of this comet coming over LA or the world in general, and like turning people that were watching it to, it's just like piles of clothes and red dust in the street. They just put like a red orange filter from the top of the screen fading down. And it's like a really simple, that must be what they did. It's just like a really simple effect, but it's so cool because it just gives this film immediately, like, you're in LA, but like it looks like it's a weird, crazy sunset always. And I just loved that that effect, that choice. It really kind of locked me into the movie. You know, there's sort of weird solar zombies, there's stupid government agents. There's a part where, you know, everyone's down and realizing, you know, that society has fallen, and the woman tells her sister, like, you know, we should do shopping spree. And then cuts to girls have, you know, Cindy Lauper, girls just want to have fun. And they're in the mall like, yay. And like trying on shoes and stuff. I was like, oh, this is great. I love it.
I remember that this did happen at a movie day, but I don't remember anything from it. I must have like gone out to grab something during it, or
run to the store for a bite or something
at all.
It's good stuff. It was really fun. I was glad that I went back and actually buckled in and watched it. It was, I like those, all those kind of movies, the post-apocalyptic, you know, what do people start doing immediately after the collapse is kind of fun to me. So, I watched a Hong Kong action movie. I haven't watched a lot of like Hong Kong movies. I feel like it's a smaller industry, called I Love Maria. There's an alternate name for it. I forget what it is, like Robo Zone or some shit. But it's sort of like Terminator RoboCopy. It's like these disparate characters end up kind of on one team, and this woman becomes essentially like a cybernetic organism. She looks sort of like the Metropolis robot from like the fucking 30s with like silver, except for her face and little diodes coming out. And fights a big sort of Ed 209 style robot that like when it moves, like the styrofoam parts of it are like wobbling. Like it's very charming, but it has very like quick cuts and editing that are like snappy and like make the action really fun. It was a pleasure to watch, and it kind of keeps escalating by the end. I think, you know, you just want to turn your brain off and throw a movie on. That's a really fun one. The last couple I'll mention, I rewatched Tango and Cash with Stallone and Kurt Russell. Very fun, stupid,
So I don't think I've seen this movie, but just based off the name alone, I was like, is the sidekick going to be an animal?
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm trying to think what you're talking about. Turner and Hooch, maybe? Like,
yeah, there we go. That's probably the one.
I mean, there is a part where
Stallone is kind of a dog in it. You know what I mean?
He is kind of a dog.
He's also considered the Italian stallion.
That's true. We've got a horse right there. There's a part where they have to escape a strip club, and Kurt Russell dresses as a woman, like looking like Bugs Bunny in drag, basically like escaping, and like gets on the back of, I believe Terry Hatcher is the actress in it. On the back of her bike and like flicks a cigarette at the cop, like, and like has like a red dress. And it's like, but it's Kurt Russell. Like he's got like a chiseled jaw. Like he's not fooling anyone.
There should be one like extremely macho guy who's like, oh, hey, honey, let me escort you across the street.
That's kind of the line where she's like, hey, hands off. That's like my merchandise or something. And it's like, oh shit. But it's very funny and kind of refreshing. Like, I don't know, in a movie that like, you could probably point to a lot of like, you know, not great, you know, things from that time period. It's like fun that like the lead super masculine male actor was like, oh, yeah, I'll dress like a woman to get out of this situation. Like, it's funny. I like that. I think that's a good addition to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then following Kurt Russell line breakdown, on a road trip with his wife, they stop at a gas station, run afoul of some local hillbillies. Shortly after, their car titularly breaks down, and when a semi-truck driver stops, she catches a ride to the nearest station until he can get a tow truck or someone out there. And then when he shows up, no one's heard of her, no one stopped by, no one knows what he's talking about, finds the driver of the truck, pulls him over like almost like citizen's arrest, like pull over, gets, you know, waves a cop down. Buddy, I've never seen you before in my life. I don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. Basically thinks he's just being like gaslit. He's like, doesn't understand why no one remembers that he was married and this woman got in his truck, and kind of escalates from there. I don't want to give too much away, but
JT Walsh, right? Plays that truck driver.
Oh, possibly. He's a recognizable face. He's great. He's great in the role. But I really enjoy it. If you haven't watched it before, it's fun. But it's one of those movies too where you're kind of like, you're sort of like frustrated, like because you're being gaslit. You're as the audience. You're like, what the fuck? I saw this happen earlier. Like, I know this. Correct. Yes. Yeah. He's great. He is awesome. Yeah.
Such a great slime ball in like every.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like I'm sure it's tough sometimes to be typecast and things, but he was really awesome in that role.
He's in a movie I really like that is one of those like midday TBS movies called The Negotiator with Sam Jackson and Kevin Spacey. But he plays this like fucking great, slimy, like, guy who works for, like, internal affairs, and, like, he's such a, like, dickhead, and he's so good at it, but, like, you just like him because he's so good at being, like, a complete slimeball. But
I mean, that's, to me, the mark sometimes of a great actor is, like, you hate them, you want to, like, wring their fucking neck, and you're like, damn, you are making me feel this shit. Sorry for the long list, but that's what I've seen.
Max, what about you?
Last time I watched Underworld, so kind of influenced what I watched this time, I watched Underworld Evolution, the sequel.
Oh boy.
That picks up right where the last one left off, but is confusing as fuck. There are a lot of things that don't seem to make sense, and I had to read a wiki page to find out what
was going on. In Underworld?
It's like there are certain things that just should have had a couple more things of exposition or just like clarification, where like especially there's one line where this guy becomes the first hybrid and they're talking about it. They're like, hey, you're the first hybrid and there's none like you. And then the next scene, this vampire comes back from like 3,000 years of sleep, and or 300, I don't know which one it is. But they see him and they're like, hey, that guy was a hybrid too, right? And they're like, yeah, definitely a hybrid. And they don't really explain it. But what happens...
Wait, implying that like hundreds of years ago, there were also hybrids?
See, that's the confusion that I had. But what was actually going on is he was awakened by the blood of a wolfman, a lycan. And that's when he became a hybrid. So, like, he hadn't been a hybrid until he was reawakened. But they don't explain it because you don't know his history, really. And you hardly know. I think, like, I don't know how you would pick this up. And especially if you watched only this movie and not the first one, you wouldn't know at all. But this guy was a lycan. But he never changed into a lycan. He was a lycan that was, like, captured by the vampires. So he's just hanging out with them and doing science work for them. So I assume they must have mentioned it at some point that he was a werewolf rather than a vampire, but not in this movie. And so like his blood is what turns him into a hybrid when he wakes up. But like very confusing when that happens.
This sounds to me like this feels like what it's like to listen to like Kingdom Hearts lore, where it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And it turns out Xehanort is a werewolf.
Definitely the Wikipedia page is like that. And there's like this other guy that's been alive for centuries, and he's not a vampire or a lycan. Apparently he's just a race called the immortal, the race of immortals, and he like is the first one and the only one, I guess. Maybe there are a couple other, a lot of this stuff not explained. This is a weird one, but check it out.
Hey, all right.
It's got Bill Nighy, I believe. No, maybe this one, I think maybe like barely.
Science guy,
maybe just in a flashback or something. But speaking of flashback, the next movie.
I just want to say I love movies with Bill Nighy in them. I wonder if we'll talk about one.
I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know.
The next one I watched was Underworld Rise of the Lycans. So here we go.
Wow. We're talking about another movie. Wow, you're just in. Okay.
Another movie with Bill Nighy. This is the history of kind of him creating a lot of trouble by
aren't a lot of these directed by the man who's married to Kate Beckinsale? Yeah.
I believe so. It's also written by Danny McBride, but not the Danny McBride you're thinking of. It's another guy named Danny McBride who was a stunt person, and then like
we're thinking of the same person actually.
Same guy.
I saw him get shot in Pineapple Express, so yeah, that's some person.
I had to look it up. I was like, are you shitting me after the first one?
You type in Google, are you shitting me? Is Danny McBride the same?
Somehow.
How old is Danny McBride?
Danny McBride has returned.
The photo of this Danny McBride makes him look more obnoxious than the Tropic Thunder of Danny McBride. Look at this fucking guy.
He's also in the first movie. I think he gets taken out. But yeah, Rise of the Lycans goes back to
I can be a werewolf too.
Goes back to like the birth of the werewolves and the history of things, and the Bill Nighy killing his daughter because she fell in love with a werewolf. Then I watched Underworld Awakening.
Jesus Christ, man.
You know what? I just got to say, if I ever suggest a bad movie in the future, I will point to your self-flagellation with the Underworld watch.
Hey, they're really good. They're really good.
They're really good.
Yeah, Max is extremely werewolf coded right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're doing a Gods of Egypt month next.
I was just prepping for the next movie suggestion that I had. And I'm getting these out of the way, so you should thank me. And I've got plans. I got plans for the next.
Why were they in your way?
What's the goal? What's the finish line that these are obscuring your way?
You saw the exit sign for Underworld, and you went, oh, and you turned your fucking car. I don't know what to tell you.
Max is, he's got a plan. I can't wait to hear where this goes. So let's let it rip, Max.
So I was just looking up Underworld and which movies had been made, and I remember I'd watched at least two of them. I think maybe only two of them, and I was like, let's see what the rest of them are like. Also, I remember that I Frankenstein was supposed to have a crossover that they didn't have.
Whoa! Oh, really?
Yeah,
I can kind of see that. They do feel sort of a similar vibe.
They feel pretty similar. Yeah, and then
turns out you're half vampire Frankenstein.
At another point, they had planned a Blade crossover.
Oh, please Marvel leave got my the Blade out of this.
Rights back to Blade.
No, let's leave him out of this.
Let's leave him out of this.
I think there was another one, but I forget. So anyway, Underworld Awakening, Kate Beckinsale. That's the one? Yeah, Kate Beckinsale.
Of course. Yes, you watch this.
Yeah, but names is what I'm getting confused by here. She gets frozen in ice and comes back like 12 years later. She has a daughter at that point, and like that's been
wait, like she had a daughter, and they've since grown up, or they were
no completely cloned during those 12 years.
Ah,
and she's like, but she is the daughter of the werewolf hybrid that she fell in love with. Again, Kingdom Hearts all over the place with this one. They set up the beginning of the movie to be like, okay, this you've seen the battle between the werewolves and the vampires, and now the real threat is humans, because they find out that werewolves and vampires exist. They go out hunting, both of their kinds, try and wipe them out completely, and then like that's when they get frozen in ice. They basically fall in water and then freeze for 12 years, but they got fished out, and the humans are like experimenting on them, stuff like that. But then it turns out that all the humans that they've been dealing with in this whole movie are actually werewolves. They were secretly werewolves, and they like were fooling everybody into thinking the werewolves had been wiped out, but they're all werewolves. So again, it's another vampire werewolf. No fighting. No, like the humans were the real monsters this whole time. Yeah, instant classic. You guys would love it. You should check it out.
I just want to note how late the Blade crossover was talked about.
Yeah.
2015.
Yeah, dude.
They were discussing it in 2015, and the reason it did not happen was because of the MCU. Right. That's how late these discussions were happening.
Yeah.
That's
MCU got
bonkers.
The rights back. I know, it's crazy.
I'm like, I'm
crossing my fingers. Mahershala Ali and Kate Beckinsale.
Can I mention something? Sort of a pivot, and we don't have to indulge this, but maybe we'll talk about it on a future episode. The trailer for Joker 2 just dropped.
Oh, good.
During the record.
Breaking news.
Supposedly a musical featuring Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn.
And Timothy Chalamet as Joker.
And Timothy Chalamet as Wonka. I'm interested to watch it, and it won't happen on this episode, but I do think we should address it at some point.
We should address it. We'll address it. Yeah. Look forward to that next time, folks.
The elephant in the room.
We'll address
the Joker musical sequel.
We will be addressing Joker 2, the trailer.
I forget if we covered that as a mainline. Do we ever do that as a mainline ep?
I think we did.
Okay.
I think so. Did we do the King of Comedy or whatever?
I think we did both.
We might have done that because that is the movie it ripped off almost entirely. But yeah. And other movies as well. Is that all you've watched movie-wise,
no,
Max?
No, I actually watched Underworld, Blood Wars.
Oh, God. There's a Blood Wars?
There's a Blood Wars, yeah. And this one's the most nuts of the whole thing. And
did you watch these solo?
No, I didn't.
You made, wow, Jenny.
Jenny started it, okay? She had us watching the Underworld. And
she started this. This is on record. This is her fault?
It is all her fault. Well, the first movie is her fault. I think the next
five. Then you got hooked.
She has a production credit on it.
Yeah. but yeah, Blood Worlds. The other thing, this is really weird about the whole Underworld series, is that when a vampire drinks another vampire's blood, they like gain their memories. They're also telepaths. Like they, in general,
or with that vampire, or what? Why would you drink another vampire's blood?
No, because they do it. I think they do it with the werewolf too. You just like find out what people were thinking. There are blood memories, they call them. I don't know.
That's like, not actually terrible to me. That's kind of interesting, but
it's weird though because like they use it to get passwords and stuff like that. It just seems like
have to take a little sip, but then you can break into
their computer. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's one of those things like time travel that just opens up a lot of like, well, all you have to do is drink their blood and you know they're lying.
And you get like that exact memory that you need in that moment.
Also like drink your blood. Like could you extract their blood surreptitiously and then drink it later and then also get the knowledge?
Yes.
Ah.
You can. That happens Ocean, at one point. Somebody saves their
blood. Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
That happens in Blood Wars.
Of course it does.
So the guy who was in White Lotus season 2, like kind of the main, not the main guy, but the other main guy, the guy who's a dick. They're all dicks. How do I explain this? The guy who's more of a dick between the two guys at the beginning of the season or whatever, that guy is in here as like the other vampire that she riffs off. And he's also like the son of Tyrion Lannister, the daddy Lannister who gets killed.
Charles Dance.
Charles Dance, yeah. So Charles Dance is in this. His son is the guy from White Lotus. There are a lot of recognizable faces in these movies where you'd kind of question why that is. But they're not as bad as you might think. I do wish they had some colors other than black and blue. Like the whole movie is basically like the Matrix was black and green. Let's do that even more so with black and blue. And they just do the whole thing in that really dark, hard to see color scheme.
These are good comparable movies in quality. Matrix and Blood Wars.
You haven't seen Blood Wars. Check it out.
Yeah,
it's true. It could be as good as Revolutions, for all I know. So.
Yeah. I think I would rather watch Blood Wars again than that one. I would say. Okay, and then I watched the last of the Underworld movies.
I'm shocked there's still more.
Underworld, The Waterboy.
What?
Most people don't know it's part of they dropped the first part of it, and most people don't know that it's part of the Underworld series. But yeah, Adam Sandler's Waterboy.
Shalene. You need to drink some more water.
Want me to bite them?
I needed to turn my brain off for a little bit, needed to have something that I could laugh at. And I really enjoy Waterboy to this day, even though it is like the dumbest movie.
I still like, sometimes I think about, because I think it's such a funny specific, but you know, when he calls in to Captain Insano.
Captain Insano.
And
what's the wrestler? Who's
the Big Show? Big Show, Paul White. He calls into him and, you know, he kind of laughs him off, but then they cut back again and he's like cry laughing. I just love that scene of Paul White. Just like he's in tears laughing.
Yeah.
The laugh is so
that's
good.
Honestly great acting. Cause he's like, he's like, it's like he heard the funniest thing ever. And it's in the context of the movie, it's like a pathetic dude.
Yeah.
But just like whatever he did on set is great. Cause he's just like, just so good.
There are so many funny parts to that movie. And while it's
the medulla.
Movie,
Oblongata.
No, Colonel Sanders. Oh my gosh. It's really good and not as problematic as you might expect.
For like a football movie in the South
for an Adam for an Adam 2000s Sandler, for an Adam Sandler movie too.
For an Adam Sandler Rob Schneider movie in the,
Yeah. So it could be a lot worse, and it's
also Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates. That's what I was just going to mention. What the fuck is Kathy Bates? But she is loving it, and she's living it up. So fantastic. I can't remember if this was the movie she won the Oscar for, but it was.
I was pretty sure.
But it would be one of those like we haven't given her an Oscar before, and she deserves it in her career. So it's
they
like
throw her one on
just
one.
Like how many more movies is she going to do? Give it to her Mama for Waterboy.
If it was this one, she earned it. She put in a lot to that role. And then Faruza Balk. And
yes.
What's his name? The Fonz.
Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler. Yeah. My gosh.
He's pathetic. Like he kind of like folds at one point and you're just like, yeah, you're like a pathetic little fucking asshole, but he's great. He's great at it.
Yeah. I loved it. And then I watched Joyride, which is a kind of like
it's Paul like Walker, right? Paul Walker, Lily Sobieski.
Different one. This is like a Asian Americans played by let me look it up. I know one is Sherry Cola, but
this one
more
came
recent
out
one.
Last year.
Yeah. Follow four Asian American friends as they bond and discover the truth of what it means to know and love who you are. But yeah, the main one is a like a lawyer, and she is sent to China to kind of close a deal. And she has two white parents that adopted her, and she's considered pretty white by all of her Asian friends. And so they kind of think she's going to be out of her zone. She also doesn't know Chinese, so like they come along to translate, but her friend is like a lot of trouble and a bit of a mess. And it's just a very like...
relatable.
Exactly. It's really funny. It's not a stoner comedy. When it's raunchy, it's very raunchy.
I like that the raunchy comedies have been kind of coming back. I think that's really fun. Bottoms and what was the Jennifer Lawrence one?
Oh, No Hard Feelings.
Yeah, like I think there's some really fun. I think that's kind of fun that's sort of coming back in.
Add this one to the list. I had a lot of good laughs with this one. And it's also like a good cry in it too. So like it's very touching at parts, but mostly just like wild comedy with a lot of funny people.
I think
in
that's good too. You know, like we have, there's things like, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is like a very funny movie, which has like a heart in it. And you're like, oh, okay. And you have like a little feel good moment in there too. So I will check that out for sure.
Yeah. It follows the typical beats for the most part, but like, definitely, I would say a well-made one of that type of movie.
That genre, yeah.
Yeah, and that's all that I've seen, Andrew. How about you?
Well, say no more, Mona Moore, because just the other day was Rex Manning Day, and I watched Empire Records.
Wow.
Starring the Kraft co-star with Faruza Balk. What is her name? Why can't I remember right now?
You're saying it, so it's going to be...
it's not. Is it Selma Blair? Am I thinking of someone different?
Selma Blair is not in that movie.
It's not Viggo's wife in Lord of the Rings.
It's not Viggo's wife in Lord of the Rings. Of course, that's Liv Tyler. Why can't I... pulling up the name IMDb. Of the movie.
Yeah, it's possible you're
Robin
just thinking
Tunney,
of it.
Robin Tunney.
Thank you.
There we go. It's totally worth it.
Is she in some Happy Madness and stuff?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm conflating it with someone else.
So yes, Empire Records, also like a movie that doesn't get made a lot today, which is just a day in the life kind of movie. Like it exists within one day. It's like one fucking crazy day, and it's
who directed that? Because I do love like what you're talking about. I love like
Alan Moyle.
Alan Moyle, Jesus, I've never heard of him. It reminds me of like what's the Linklater one? Matthew McConaughey. All right.
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused, where it's just like the last day of a school, and it's just like it's not even like there's not even like a resolution. It's just sort of like all these weird disparate stories, mm-hmm. and this is a little more focused because it's kind of everyone in the store. But right. I do dig that. I dig that style.
Yeah.
I went to a barbecue place that was where they filmed Dazed and Confused. I think it was a bowling alley then.
Oh.
Or in the movie, they might have.
Like, oh wait, in the place where they had like the billiard tables or whatever.
I think so, but they might have only used the outside. I'm not totally sure.
Oh, just like an exterior shot or something. That's still cool. I like when I roll up on a filming location.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, Empire Records, fun. I don't know. For a movie that's made in the 90s, also surprisingly kind of isn't super problematic. Touches on a lot of really sensitive subjects that a movie in the 90s you may not have that much sensitivity towards. So
sure.
Yeah, it was a good watch. And I watched it accidentally on Rex Manning Day. I didn't even realize it coincided with that. It just popped up on Paramount Plus, and I was like,
it's subliminal at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. We just all know deep in our hearts it's Rex Manning Day. So yeah, I thought it was a fun watch. I would recommend it to people if they have not seen it in a while. It might be a little hard to watch for the first time now, but just also because like what's the shared modern experience of going to a record store? You know what I mean? Like
we have some here in Seattle, you know, we still have record stores, but it does feel like it's out of the, it's not like a shared experience the way it was for a lot of folks.
And like, it's a story about a, you know, an independent, record store potentially being bought out by a larger national corporation. It just like, that, you know, that was such a thing, you know, in that time of like Blockbusters and Tower Records and stuff like that kind of taking over independent mm-hmm. spaces. Now there's just like neither of those two things exist at all. So it's just, you know, it's just fucking Amazon. But
yeah,
it was a fun watch. But anyways, let's talk about some TV shows we've seen.
TV shows we've seen.
We've seen.
Max, Robert, go first. I heard Max's voice, and I was just like, "That's Max."
Max, I'm about to go.
That's my friend Max.
Basically, I'm caught up on X-Men 97, which is on its fourth episode. I think the fifth one's coming out tomorrow as of this record. I'm loving it. It's great. I think I mentioned before that I like the X-Men, but I wasn't like locked into it the way some people were when they were kids. And I couldn't tell you, you know, I didn't watch the entirety of the original series and tell you every episode or whatever, but they're doing a lot of great.
You didn't have any trading cards, did you?
No,
fake.
I didn't. They're doing really fun stuff. I especially like that the character Morph, who is sort of this gray skinned, noseless mutant, can sort of, he's the X-Men's Mystique. He can look like anyone. And there's a lot of moments in the show where he will become like Lady Shiva or Angel or blah, 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 or Blob. And it's like, you get to see those characters because he's transforming into them without them bringing the actual characters back for whatever reason. And it's just like a fun way to kind of call back to all that stuff and have them on screen, even if it's not the actual character. So
what, was Morph in the original, mm-hmm. but not looking like that at all?
If he was, it was in the late seasons, and I don't remember that it ended with him as one of the X-Men. Because that's like, when this show starts, it's like, Morph is on the X-Men. I thought he died.
In the original series, Morph is like a part of the original team in like the start of the show. And then I think he is presumed dead, but I think he's kidnapped by Mr. Sinister.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains it, because even in the intro, it's sort of like, alluded to like, yeah, like he's scared of like Mr. Sinister, or like it's haunting him. And they do, minor spoiler alert, like Sinister comes back and he's like, oh fuck, it's this dude is fucking bad. Like,
yeah.
So that explains it probably. It's like they had incorporated him at least since the end of the last show, and he is still fucked up by all that.
Yeah.
And
he was,
then
so he was just like a normal looking dude, and I remember this is so weird.
He has like a human face. It's like sort of like brown hair, and like he just like is like a normal dude. When he has to go out, it seems like he's just taken on a sort of form.
I don't think in the old show, I don't think they ever did.
I don't think they did the gray face in the old show.
And this one, like there is like a default face, which is like this is what I look like when I'm not looking like someone else.
But I also
as far as I know, it's just. He can look like someone and take on their form, but he can't mimic powers. So he can look like Cyclops, but he can't shoot beams. He can look like Angel and fly, which is cool. He can have the wings. But I think it's just because the wings are part of his body versus a power that he could emit.
Mm-hmm.
So like he couldn't become Storm and fucking start making storms happen.
Hey, well, neither can Storm now. Spoilers.
Oh, I haven't seen any of these. But I do remember, I remember Wolverine shouting, "This one's for you, Morph."
Yeah.
In that Wolverine voice.
"This one's for you, Morph."
Wow. The other show is I finished season 2 of Invincible.
That's on my list too.
I love it.
But I'm not finished, so don't spoil it.
Yeah,
I won't spoil anything. I told you reread the comics recently, and I liked it more because I think I was harsher on it 10, 15 years ago when it ended. And I was like, actually, this ends in a pretty satisfying way and a creative way for a superhero comic. And I really liked it. I liked what they did in the second episode, or pardon me, the second season. I didn't like the break. The rumor is that it's coming back for the third season and not going to have, you know, multiple months between one half and the other half. I would really love for Kirkman to be able to finish this entirely. I would love for all of the comic story to be animated, come out as a show. It's really great, but it's also like kind of triggering. Like, I don't remember how much you guys have read of it, but like there's some stuff where I was like, ooh, this villain's going to come in and mess some stuff up. And I think having the music, having the sound effects, the voice acting, the pacing, you know, versus like seeing a panel and then seeing it all kind of fleshed out is done really well and makes you just want to jump into the screen and strangle someone. And I think they did a really good job. And I think it opens it up to a great place for the third season, a lot of character change and stuff. So I'm keeping it very general, but I was very happy with how it sort of wrapped up this time around. And that's what I've seen.
Nice. Yeah. I've also started, Invincible, and because they took that break, I hadn't really even like dived in until it was all out. And, it's nice getting back to it because I do like that series. And
how far into the second half are you, Max?
I'll say 3 episodes, I think, possibly 4, but I think
it's 8 total, and I think they took a break at 4 or 5. So
okay, yeah, I'm only 3 in, probably. How about you, Andrew?
I think I have 2.5 episodes left. So
okay.
So you're past the break, but you're
yeah. I'll try and get that finished by the next time we record. Yeah,
sweet. No, I mean, I would love to talk about it with some people because it's good stuff.
I don't have any more Underworlds on my list. So
thank God. There's the video. There is the video game. If you do want
to, fingers crossed, they start developing something for that.
I just hope for a Invincible Underworld crossover.
Yeah, hopefully. I know they whiffed on the Blade and the I, Frankenstein and a Resident Evil crossover. So Invincible.
Oh, that's the other one. That was the other one. Yeah. Yeah, I was. They could also. I bet they could do a Riddick. Anyways, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I watched 3 episodes of the Donald Glover one. Mm-hmm. And then stopped, and I don't think I'll go back.
Oh, interesting.
I think there are some things I like about it, but the motivations and the relationships of the characters, I don't really find believable or compelling, or like, I don't know, are they supposed to be good at their job? Are they supposed to be into their job? Are they supposed to, like, it's are they into each other? Do they hate each other? And I know that's kind of what they're going for, but it never felt like that. Like, I'm in this to figure it out. Right. Like, there's some enjoyable writing and acting and some interesting like scene setups, but overall I'm like, I don't get it. And it, like, at the end of every episode, I kind of think that, like, what happened there? And, like, keep thinking, oh, it's going to explain itself, or it's going to come together in the next episode. And it hadn't for three episodes straight. Each one, I'm thinking the same thing. Like, well, that, it's a little off kilter, but is it, like, is that intentional? Or is that, like, the writing doesn't really line up or whatever? So I don't know. I think I'm going to stop it. I've heard good things, but haven't really seen it in what I was watching.
Bummer.
But I'm also going to check out the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie one to confirm, see if I was just missing
something. Still like spy subterfuge couple things?
I don't know. Like, they don't even feel like spies. They feel like they, like, stumbled into some gig economy thing and, like, happen to sometimes kill people, but and then there are, like, rules for, I just don't get it. I don't get it. And then the other thing I watched was I think it's called The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. This is an Apple TV one with Noel Fielding, where he's playing a it kind of reminds me of Our Flag Means Death, but it's not pushing as many boundaries or anything like that. Not really, like, as it's not doing as much. It's more of just like a typical story, but has some of those swashbuckling adventures, except not pirates. They're highwaymen. They're like, he wants to become a highwayman, but not really doing any harm to people, like not killing, just kind of being, just kind of robbing, but not even necessarily taking from people who need it. I don't know. It's a comedy. I thought it was pretty fun. I enjoyed it. We watched the whole thing. And I recommend it. It's similar vein as Our Flag Means Death, but, yeah. If you like that, you might check it out. Depending on the reasons, you might be a little bit disappointed. Like, I think they go in some similar directions, but just don't take it to the same levels or anything like that. But it's a fun little silly romp with Noel Fielding being enjoyable.
Yeah.
How about you, Andrew? What have you seen for TV?
I watched X-Men 97, also caught up on that. I thought the most recent episode was really fun. The episode where Jubilee has to, like, go into the, like, basically the X-Men
Mojovers
arcade stand-up video game. That was I'm not always the biggest fan of, like, you know, just total, like, fan service type of things. I thought that was a pretty fun version of that. I thought that was a cool thing to do. And, you know, like, I'm Magneto, Master of Magnetism was, like, such a...
It was like playing a Marvel vs. Capcom game. Like,
It was fun. Catching up on Invincible, it's a thing I can't watch a bunch of in a row because it's just, it is brutal, man. Like, it's like some of the stuff, like, I maybe need to reread the comics because I just don't remember, especially earlier on, the comics being so brutal, but maybe they are and I just don't remember it. But, like, It translates to animation as so fucking brutal when it's, like, you know, characters are, like, choking on blood or, like, you know, just stuff like that where it's just like, ah, like, it just, it's so, it makes your skin crawl a little bit, but it is really good and I'm enjoying it. It just, it's a hard thing to watch a bunch of at once.
Sure.
And the comics also do this, but it really has a good, it captures that feeling of, like, what happens if the superhero messes up?
Yeah.
And in comics, most of the time, most comics are, they're going to, like, figure out a way to reverse it. Mm-hmm. Right. So everything that they did didn't actually happen, or they're able to completely fix it.
Right.
But in this one, they really do a lot of, like, yeah, that person got smashed to pieces. They do also bring people back.
Yeah, but there are stakes, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just,
exactly.
I was sorry, go ahead.
Stakes and mistakes. There are a lot of things where it's like, yeah, you really did mess that up. And if you had done it differently, like hundreds of people wouldn't have died.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, you haven't gotten to it yet, so I won't say it, but there's a scenario that happens in one of the episodes I was just watching where it's like, I wonder how they're going to reverse time to like fix this. And it's just like, no, like this really happens in the story. This is canon. And it just like, you have to move on from it. Like it's just not,
Which is weird because they have like time travel. They have like multiverses. They have all that stuff and they intentionally don't use it, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Or they use it with like, you know, an appropriate amount of like, well, actually this would mess everything up. So we can only use it this way or whatever.
Right.
So,
Yeah. The other thing I've been watching is Star Trek Discovery came back for its fifth and final season. And, I was very happy. I love Doug Jones's character. He plays this, Kelpian character in a Saru. And I, you know, they very much write him off in the second episode. Like he's just like retiring. And I was like, I wonder, you know, like what the deal is. And I read an interview with him and he was just like, I'm just really fucking tired of putting on like 6 hours of makeup to be this character. And it's really hot. And I was just like, oh, good for him. He's just like, I'm fucking tired of doing this. Like, even though it's the last season, he was just like, you know what? I'm done. Count me out. So wow. I was glad that Doug Jones gets a break. That man is one of our best like prosthetics actors in the world. So just give that man some time to do something else. But
imagine being so good at something that's so uncomfortable to everybody.
Yeah.
That's what you end up doing for the rest of your life is doing the uncomfortable stuff that everybody else is trying to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, it finally got to the point where he couldn't handle it.
Got too much for him. But yeah, I'm excited for this season. I think it's going to be a good last season. Discovery has been, I think it's gone up. It's always been on an upward trajectory because I didn't like the first season very much anyways. And so I kind of have always liked the trajectory of Discovery. I think it's better than it used to be. So if there are any Trek fans out there who felt like season one of Discovery was not very Trekky, I agree. And they fixed it. So, you know, give it a shot later on.
I still can't believe that Discovery merged with HBO and became Max.
It was a weird move. It was a weird move, but... it worked for him. So.
I really enjoy watching Star Trek Max, the fifth season.
Yeah, it's a really good name too. but yeah, that's all I've seen for TV. So guys, let's talk about the movie we watched for today from 2007 from the Cornetto trilogy. Folks, we watched Hot Fuzz.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
We watched Hot Fuzz starring Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. I almost said starring Edgar Wright. He's not in the movie. And Bill Nighy. Gosh. Timothy Dalton. Every British actor that you can think of appears in this movie at some point. So, guys, Hot Fuzz is not streaming free anywhere, but you can rent it on any major platform. You can buy it on any major platform. But Hot Fuzz 2007, would you guys recommend people watch Hot Fuzz?
I would. It's very fun. Apparently borrowed or was inspired by 100+ action movies. I don't think I looked up the full list.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they reference some in the film, but it's very enjoyable, and I think especially picks up in the second half with the murder mystery.
Yes. Max, what about you?
I remembered liking Shaun of the Dead more than this one, but I think on a second watch, I think I prefer this one to Shaun of the Dead. I think it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really good, and I think they, you know, put in some good performances. I think it's funny. I think it's, interesting the way they go through and pull all of those action movies in while still, you know, poking fun at them. And Olivia Colman is great.
She's so good. She's so funny in this.
Someone who's gone on to be like such a lauded actor, which is so funny to me.
This is the Kathy Bates Waterboy.
Yeah. This is her Lifetime Achievement Award.
What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching. There are a couple of scenes that are a little gruesome, even for me.
The church.
The church, and then the small model town with Timothy Dalton towards the end.
The church again.
Yeah. This is I think it's an easy recommendation. I also agree. I think I do like it more than Shaun of the Dead. And I love Shaun of the Dead. This is like, it's comparing like two things I love so much, but like this, if Shaun of the Dead is like a loving homage to zombie movies, this is a full blown, like love letter, you know, like expressing explicit, like horniness for action movies, like buddy
and,
cop
and
action
like
movies.
Buddy cop in particular.
Yes.
Like,
they are fuck. This is I can't express how much fun I think they probably had in like crafting this movie, making the movie, filming the movie. It's everything about it is a loving, just like their entry into the genre, and it's so fun. And like you said, so much of it is referencing other buddy cop movies. You know, there's direct Point Break and Bad Boys 2, you know, like they talk about them. But yeah, it's so fun. Such a fun movie.
I was confused by who Edgar Wright was, and I was like, isn't he in this movie? But I was thinking of Stephen Merchant.
Stephen Merchant, yeah, very fun. Like, again, every British actor feels like is like at least in this for a second. Like, Cate Blanchett is one of the, you know, is his girlfriend.
That's
a
fun cameo, yeah.
Who, like, she's uncredited in the movie. Like, she is just like, that's, there's just a lot of people like that.
Jim Broadbent and Bill Nighy and, just like a million people.
Yeah. This is this police officer from London gets reassigned to this small village in, you know, kind of rural England. And there's a cabal, there's like a mystery of like what is happening here. There's a ton of misdirect in this movie about like, who's the bad guy. Timothy Dalton is pitch perfect as like a, like 80s villain. Like, every line of his leads you to believe that he's a fucking, you know, like, murderer. And they're all, like, you know, double entendres about, like, it'd just be a treasure to, you know, dig into that head of yours and release all of your secrets. And just, like, he's excellent.
What does he say? He's like, cheers to her demise. It's like, don't you mean her memory? It's like, yes, that.
Yeah. He's so good in this. So fun. Also, so I don't remember what the podcast was called, but it was like a screenwriting podcast.
Gentlemen Overlords. Sorry.
It's this really successful movie podcast called Gentlemen Overlords. It was a screenwriting podcast that Edgar Wright was on, and he was talking about this movie in particular. And in 2007, when this movie was getting released, whoever is the production company that released it in America really wanted the trailer to include the twist. And he fought so hard for the twist not to be revealed in the trailer. And it's just like, that's nutty to me that like somebody who, you know, is in charge of marketing or in charge of movies in any level would be like, yeah, that's a good thing for the trailer. And it's like, he had to be like, no, if we give it away in the trailer, it's not going to be fun when people see the movie.
Well, like the twist implying like the gunfight between him and all the citizens?
No,
or like,
the twist being that it's not one bad guy, that it's like 12 bad guys, and it's all the people
in
the
town.
Well,
that is, yes.
Yeah. It's insane that was almost in the trailer.
You can show that it's a funny action movie, but you shouldn't show that reveal the killer ostensibly.
Right.
Like, that's no fun.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem, from a marketing standpoint, like that would be effective. Because I can understand the marketing team not giving a shit about how people feel once they're in the theater, because their job is to get people there. So I've seen several cases of that where they're just like, yeah, it really doesn't matter as long as people get in. Like throwing an actor in there, some big name actor who is a fun cameo and would be a nice surprise, but would also bring in like twice as many people if they're shown in the trailer. So they just show them in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I understand that, but like, what's the appeal even of showing, hey, there's a bunch of people in cloaks. Like, oh yeah, I gotta see that movie now.
Yeah, it's so weird to me that was even a consideration. But like, yeah, he had to fight really hard to make that not part of the trailer. Just, that's wild to me. But, yeah. Are there like particular set pieces of this movie you guys really like?
Well, there are set pieces I like, and there's also like the fun callbacks between the Coronado trilogy things. But I was curious, like, because I feel like you're not big on this, like, it's pretty gory.
Yeah.
Like, the deaths are pretty gory. Like, they cut to like, oh, they're dead. And then it shows like decapitated heads on the fucking road. The piece of masonry off the church falling in that guy's head.
The fucking journalist who like ends up looking like a Silent Hill villain for like a second, where it's just like,
yeah. And I didn't think his name was Messenger, which I was like, oh, don't kill the messenger. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just kind of curious how that landed with you, because I was like, oh, I forgot that this is like, I mean, maybe this is crazy. Like, there's the part in Shaun of the Dead where like David gets pulled apart.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is like a gorier movie. I think
it is. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, I mean, spoiler alert, but at the end when Timothy Dalton.
That's so gross.
That is to me, like, even now, I've watched this movie probably, you know, six times in my life. So like, I know it's coming. And it's still, I'm just like, it does make me go, ah, every time.
And it's actually worse that he's alive.
And he's alive. He goes, oh,
like,
really?
If he died that way, I'd be like, okay, great.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. But,
but instead he's like, this fucking hurts, or whatever. And you're just like, oh,
really
no.
Hurt. It's just like.
And he's stuck there until the ambulance can get there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just feels a lot more believable at that point.
Right. That like that person's going to have to be extricated from it. And like,
yeah. You got to think about all the effects of it. And it's like when you're watching a movie, especially, you know, violent action movie, you're just used to all, like any kind of big thing happening, right? Mm-hmm. Like any extreme thing. But when they then slow it down and be like, okay, now you have to think about what it's going to be like for this guy to live the rest of his life with this stuff. Yeah, it kind of takes you in a different direction.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the callbacks within this movie. I like a lot of like the running gags that they have of the swan that's running around. And like the different character traits and the guy that you can't understand. And again, Olivia.
That there's all the satisfying, like, the stuff that comes back. Like they confiscate all the farmers, you know, firearms. And then it ends up being like the only reason they have guns at the end is because they have all of his stuff, including the sea mine, which comes back even later. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. I love that the farmer is a guy that nobody can understand except the other guy who only a few people can understand, and just like there's a third level of like translation going on.
They even bring that cop who's like, oh, we need him because he's the guy who can kind of
talk to
maybe
him,
translate for him.
Yeah. Like, that's so fun.
What was I going to say?
When's your birthday? February 27th. What year? Every year.
Get out of here. Sean, why am I calling him Sean? Is his name?
Simon,
not
Peg.
Sean Penn.
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg.
Nicholas Angel.
He's Nicholas Angel is his name.
Yeah.
Nicholas Angel, which was somebody who worked on the, like maybe one of the writers or something. There was a Nick Angel in the credits.
That's fun.
That was not the cast member. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that he did a really good job of kind of like playing the straight man, right? Or like the guy who's like really
competent
and disappointed in everyone else not being like up to his level of standards, and everyone else kind of telling him to chill out. I thought that it really worked in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're going to continue and close out the Coronado trilogy after this, but it's something I appreciate about the movies is that the first one is Nick Frost and Simon Pegg being both pretty inept.
Yeah.
They're both losers. Nick Frost is holding, you know, Simon Pegg's character back a bit more, but they're both not great dudes. They're barely getting along and sort of surviving by luck, especially in the zombie apocalypse. This one is Simon Pegg being overly competent to the point where he's so by the book that he is, you know, hurting the local economy. You know, he kicks all the fucking kids out of the bar, then it's like, want another cranberry juice? And he's like, no, I'm fine. And it's like, yeah, you fucking killed their business. Like, they're not going to like this. He's just too much of a stickler. And then Frost, of course, has never had to police, mm-hmm. technically. And then we will discover in the next movie that it feels like they finally swap fully, where like Simon Pegg is the fuck up. And Nick Frost is in a much better headspace and the more responsible one, which I really enjoy. So I like that the arc over the trilogy of having them kind of shift and swap roles a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
I can't wait till they make the fourth movie. I know we were talking about this last time.
They'll have to make a fourth Cornetto.
The banana flavored Cornetto, I think. Yeah, probably. And then they're both extremely competent people. That's going to be
super competent. Yeah. Rob, do you have any favorite set pieces?
Oh gosh. I mean, I love like all the callbacks to the other movies. Like I love like the fence gag across all the movies is very funny, where like he's flipping and jumping and scaling them. And then Nick Frost, like, I wonder if they had to do that in one take, but like, he kind of like runs, but like, completely stumbles and falls through the fence. God damn, it's so fucking good. I mean, what do you do in that scenario? Do you have like three fences in case it's not the right shot or whatever? Right. Like, I don't know. It's just so good. But like I said, I think it really picks up once it becomes a murder mystery and you're wondering who in the town is responsible for these things. I think it really amps up, and I just love when Simon Pegg finally loosens up and goes home with Nick Frost, watches finally some of the movies he's been drilling him about, then they end up referencing later. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's just great that they unabashedly are referencing and, you know, putting these other action movies that came ahead of them on a pedestal, because it makes it for a fun film. And if you've seen those movies, it's even more rewarding as opposed. And then if you haven't seen them, it's still a great action movie. Like,
right.
It's still super fun. You're sort of in Nicholas Angel's role, where you're like seeing shooting up in the air because you can't shoot your buddy and stuff like that for the first time. But like, even better if you're acquainted with the source material.
Right.
I don't know. I can't peg it down. I mean, it's just it's also just great to me that they always pay off the things they set up, like the goose that's running around, the swan or goose or whatever that's running around.
It's at one of the last scenes of the movie where they're in that big car chase, and you know Timothy Dalton goes goose, and then like it cuts to a reaction shot of the goose going rah! And like it fucking makes me laugh so much every time I see that. It's so funny.
You know what's like a jump scare is like when Jim Broadbent like drives away at the end and he's like, oh, I'm out of here, and then turns around and the goose hisses and like.
Yeah.
And, like, goes over the camera and it's like, holy fuck. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever dealt with those. They're mean motherfuckers. So I can see that happening. And then almost Hans Moleman style, like slowly crashes into a tree.
That was good.
I mean, we already referenced it, but I think basically ending, it's not quite the ending of the movie, but ending with a kaiju fight in a model of the town.
So fun.
Is so funny. Yes. And like they add it to the punches that it's like, oof, just like makes it sound a lot more grandiose than it should be. What other movie that is doing that? That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe the new Beetlejuice. They'll fight we'll on see. The table.
We'll see.
I also like, there were a couple like lines that I remember, because I haven't watched this in a long time, but a couple lines that I remember, like the big bushy beard.
Great and big then, bushy beard.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, that's from this movie. And then the yarp and the narp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great when he gets attacked by Lurch in his room and does manage to knock him out. He distracts him with the monkey. He's just like, ooh. Knocks him out. And then it's like, you know, Lurch, is it done? And he goes, yarp. And it's like, okay, great. Like, just like all you have to say to mimic his voice. That's such a funny joke. I love that.
It's actually, it's funnier because he goes, is Sergeant Angel taken care of? Yarp. So he's not coming back. Narp.
Yeah, like trying to fit. Trying
he's
to
like
figure
taking
out
a guess. Like, is that? Does he say that?
And then the pause and the confirmation.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I mean, and this is a very minor nitpick, and especially for the time, but like, there's like the digital blood in a few parts where I'm like, but it's like, if you're having a piece of a church fall into someone's body cavity, I don't blame you for not having like squibs and the proper like
stuff.
Like he falls over and it goes like there's like this flourish that where I'm just kind of like, all right. But
yeah,
that is a super small that is a nitpick.
It wasn't one of Weta's best, but I mean they you know they had
I heard they forged all the armor for this movie, but I didn't love the digital effects as much.
Yeah. I guess if I have one nitpick about the movie, it's that I don't think it needs the police station blowing up at the end. It feels like it feels a little bit like the movie, I think, like with the arrests of all the townspeople, and then like I don't know, I thought like them maybe having just like one more scene at the police station would be fine. So I thought like it blowing up and then like Danny pretending or you thinking Danny's been killed.
He's putting flowers on his grave, but see, I think that's got to be pulled from so many other action movies that just had to be in there, where it's like they needed an explosion, right? It's like they needed like something to blow up.
Sure.
So I
and it did
unnecessary it, maybe, but like
it did
fun
call,
that it
right. Yeah, it calls back the sea mine. It's you know, it's like it's it does make it everything gets kind of tied up in that way, but. I liked the trope of, you know, the kind of inept police squad, like eventually getting on his side and then like,
yeah,
you know, hey, don't fuck it up, you know, and I wouldn't give you the pleasure, you know, like they're doing a lot of that sort
of. Those two fucking detectives are so annoying the whole movie.
The
and
Andes.
Then they like finally get on board and like, it's fun when they're just like a crew. And listen, ACAB, this is propaganda.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I'm not endorsing that shit, but it is fun in a fake movie scenario to see these guys finally, you know, syncing up. What is she? She hits the one who's from the Dark Place, actually, is the actress at the grocery store.
Oh.
And Olivia Colman hits her with like the wet sign. And then it's like, nothing like a little girl on girl. And then they all kind of laugh at each other. Like they're so. It seems like all the police want to do is just like make each other laugh, but not solve crimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love right after that, they're like, you know, they're okay, let's go get him. And then like three random grocery store attendants start throwing fruit at them, yelling, fruit attack, fruit attack. And then they start opening fire on them. And it's like,
yeah.
we'll take care of them. As like, they're just like tossing like produce at
them. I think that was the one that took me back the most. I mean, they were already like just the, you know, swatted up cops
right.
going in and taking care of business and everything. But when the one group is throwing fruit at them and they start firing back shotguns, I was like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on the movie before we head out?
I mean, just I'm so glad it exists. I'm happy it's part of this weird, untraditional trilogy that's very loosely connected by an ice cream. I wonder if it's the, I mean, you guys said, maybe you enjoy it the most of the three, but I'm excited to explore World's End next week.
Max?
Yeah, because I thought I liked Shaun of the Dead most of the three and then found out that I like this one. So maybe we'll find out that World's End is my favorite. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed watching it. I thought I owned it on DVD, but apparently I don't.
Yeah. No, neither of us gave you a secondhand copy or hand-me-down copy of it.
That's exactly what I thought happened, but I couldn't find it. So maybe I do own it, but I don't.
Wow.
I just couldn't find it.
Oh,
or
real
maybe
quick,
I got rid of it eventually.
I also want to mention when I was in Edinburgh, I did go to a World's End pub in Edinburgh. So I can say that I've been to, if not the actual bar,
a World's End bar.
And I assume that Simon Pegg owns it or something.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Late.